Welcome to episode 63 of Communicast, a communication skills podcast. I'm Scott D'Amico, president of Communispond, a global communication skills training organization. When it comes to interactions with your team, focus on quality over quantity. Fantastic advice from my guest, Dr. David Schreiner. David is the president and CEO at Katherine Shaw Bethea Hospital and author of the best-selling book, Be the Best Part of Their Day. In this episode, we talk about adopting an abundance mindset, making time in your schedule for priorities, and how to incorporate appreciative inquiry. I hope you enjoy. Dave, thank you so much for joining me today.
Scott, thank you for having me. It's so exciting to see the impact that you're having on executive and leadership communication. I really appreciate you having me here.
Absolutely. Glad to do it. Really looking forward to our conversation today and hearing about the great work that you're doing. But before we jump too far into it, why don't you tell the listeners just a little bit about you, your journey, and the great work that you are doing today?
Well, thanks, Scott. I've had the opportunity to be at Katherine Shaw Bethea Hospital, which is an independent rural hospital in Dixon, Illinois, tucked up in the northwest part of the state. I've been here since 1989, so working on 35 years. I've been our president and chief executive officer since 2011. And we have a pretty cool situation here. We have about 950 employees. I've been fortunate enough that my wife and I have been a big part of that community. Our children were raised here. We didn't have to move around every 3 or 4 years. And so what I have done over the last few years is gained an interest in executive communication. And so I went through a doctoral program at Benedictine University in the Chicago suburbs, and my dissertation became a book. And I'm really excited about sharing that with the world and with your audience.
Outstanding. Wow. 35 years. Very, very impressive, especially with the tenure that you've had there as CEO. And yet to mention the book, I have a copy of it right here. Be the Best Part of Their Day, Supercharging Communication with Values-Driven Leadership. Very much in my wheelhouse. I'm really enjoying it. And, you know, one of the things that jumped out to me, one of the things that you mentioned in the book early on was because of the unique nature of your role, especially working in a hospital setting, 9 a.m., you could be meeting with a Harvard-trained physician. 9:30 a.m., you're meeting with a GED educated person that's heading up housekeeping or working in housekeeping. Both meetings equally important, can have a big impact on the flow and how the hospital operates. But I can imagine just with the diverse audience that you work with, so many different areas of the business that you get exposure to, and especially as you're very much out there and talking and meeting with your staff, that you interact with folks with so many different communication styles, and you get to see so many great things and maybe some not so great things. But, you know, Dave, from your perspective, when you hear that somebody is a really strong communicator or they have great communication skills, what does that mean to you? What's the vision that comes into mind?
That's a great question, Scott. And what you mentioned, that diversity of people that I get a chance to interact with, is one of the favorite parts of my job. Because for me, it's always how I can modify my style to make sure that I meet their needs as opposed to the other way around. So that's certainly what I think going in. As far as the best communicators that I have seen, and I had the opportunity to interview 5 hospital CEOs from some of the most successful hospitals around the country, and I found commonality in all of those. And all of that began with a very authentic love for the people that they were interacting with. And you could see it in the way that they communicated. You could hear it in their voice, the types of questions that they asked, Scott. I just saw that over and over again. And I had that confirmed by the people that reported to and worked with those leaders. So it's just that idea that in order for me to communicate well, I have to care about you. And that means being present, listening to what you're saying, and being deeply interested in what you have to say. And that's really easy to talk about and harder to do as we go through our day to day, right?
Absolutely. You hit on being present there. That's something that I really work hard to do, whether it's for these types of calls or one-on-ones with my staff, or if I'm meeting with one of our clients. And it's challenging. There's lots of distractions going on out there. We have lots of meetings stacked up. One of the things that you talk about in the book is this concept of rounding. And, you know, communication and meeting with people through rounding to try and be present. Can you talk a little bit about how you accomplish that in your role with all the things that you have going on, but still manage to be present and accessible for your people?
Rounding is a concept that was first introduced by Quint Studer in the hospital space. And when we think about rounding, we think about physicians doing rounds on their patients. And it also works for the executive team members. And it's something that I have incorporated into my practice in a very meaningful way. And the first part of that, Scott, is scheduling it. For me, if it's not on my calendar, or if it's the first time, the first thing that I allow my administrative assistant to delete when things are busy, then it just won't happen. So it is a priority for me. I do miss it every once in a while that I have to cancel or reschedule, but it's a priority for me. And I think that's really important. The other learning that I had as I began doing this is that it's better to spend more time in less departments than trying to do that big swing and see everybody. When I was a baby CEO, I had a wonderful gift of flying around our organization, and I could see the whole thing in like 15 minutes. You know, it's just a hi, how's it going? And that's completely worthless. What I found is if I went in and I had the opportunity based on what they had going on that day to spend some time with the staff, to ask them what I could do to support them, to listen what's important to them and how we can better serve our patients and our patients' families, that's where the real magic was. So for me, it was slowing down, spending more time in the individual departments. And what I try to do is I try to hit each department in our organization every quarter.
That seems like everyone's going to have probably a different cadence that works for them. And in addition to scheduling it, right, which is important, and protecting it, that's something that I do on my calendar. I have certain things that are very important. I block them off, I schedule them, and I'm pretty strict about keeping them on there. The thing that I really liked that you talked about in the book with how do you found the time to do this, right? Because as an executive, I'm sure that schedule is pretty packed. So one of the great things that you did was start to look at, okay, do I need to be in this meeting? If I need to be in it, do I have to be there the whole time? Is this our meeting? Could we do it in 45 minutes or 30 to 25 minutes? So really starting to take a hard look at how am I spending my time and breaking away from the norm of, okay, every meeting is 30 or 60 minutes, or I have to be in every meeting the entire time. So I think breaking away from that is a great way for those listening that are struggling to find time to really be accessible and connect with their staff, to find those minutes here and there, and they add up.
They very much do add up. And as the owner, as the entrepreneur, as the president or CEO, or as the department leader, I really think developing that personal screening tool that you mentioned many of them, Scott, does the meeting need to be had? Do I need to be a part of that? Am I going to meaningfully contribute or have an impact on the goal of the meeting? I started scheduling meetings. If they're 30-minute meetings in the past, now they're 25. If they were 60, now they're 50. And that gives me time not only to just know that we've got a hard stop, but also I can collect my thoughts and summarize the meeting that I just finished before I into the next one. And I think that's really hard for leaders because our days can fill up. And in many ways, virtual meetings have made that even more difficult because I don't even have walk time between them in some cases now, right? Jump from one at the top of the hour to another at the bottom of the hour. And, you know, you're looking for time to go to the bathroom at some point throughout our day, right? So it's a real.
Yeah. Absolutely. I remember before working at a large organization when I would travel out there to the headquarters and they have, you know, campuses all over the building. And I'm just thinking like, in the last 10 minutes of the meeting, I'm thinking, how am I going to get out of here? How am I going to get across campus, get there in time, you know, not be disheveled and, you know, distracted and trying to think about what were my action items from this meeting as I'm going into the next meeting. You know, so being very intentional with your time is a great way to do this so that you can truly connect with people. As you mentioned, it's not the drive by, walking by and waving. It is really taking the time to talk with people, to learn about them and to ultimately hear and keep your finger on the pulse as to what's going on at your organization.
Yeah, if I can share a quick thought about that. You talked about the campus and going from one place to the other, and we're not that big. I mean, we have 950 employees, but still, you know, it can be a 5 or 10 minute walk between buildings or maybe even a short drive in some cases. But one of the things that I found, Scott, is that if I don't leave adequate time for that walk, I may pass someone and fail to interact with them. And that might have been my one shot in 3 months, 6 months, maybe 12 months, where I had a chance to connect even briefly with someone and talk to them a little bit. Because I think, you know, if I just walk by, I don't acknowledge, I don't stop and see how things are going for them, then I miss that opportunity. And they may go home that night, and I certainly wasn't the best part of their day. They may go home and say, you know, the CEO walked by me and he didn't even nod. You know, what type of an does that leave as we talk about trying to achieve our organization's mission and trying to support our team members? So I want to do the opposite of that. I'd rather overload that time between appointments and leave myself that flexibility to talk to someone in the hallway if they have something that is important towards what the work that we do.
As leaders, it's important to recognize the outsized impact that you can have on somebody's view of their job and of the work that they do and their engagement and their experience at your organization. As you mentioned, if you just blow by somebody, they don't see you but once a quarter or once every 6 months, that can really, really impact their views of you as a leader, their thoughts of, gosh, dude, am I valued here? What am I doing here? So it's, you know, sometimes it's just a nod and a wave or a very quick, you know, 30, 60 second conversation can make a big difference for somebody.
And we all grow into these roles, right? I mean, we weren't born CEOs. We weren't born business owners. And I underestimated the impact that the things that I said, and maybe more importantly, the way that I said them, were felt by the members of our organization. And sometimes we have to be a little more careful. And I hesitate to use that word because we always want to be authentic. And I believe strongly in transparency. But I've just learned to be more intentional about how I communicate and what I communicate, and doing so in a very meaningful way. And that was not something that's natural for me. I've tried to pick up on some of the primary theses of my research and just the things that I found that were best practices. I think it's an evolved strategy. And you talk about that with many of your guests. How do we become not just communicators, but outstanding, effective communicators?
And a big part of that is that self-awareness, realizing that the things that you say and the messages that you send, whether it is verbally, non-verbally, through an email, you could be having a bad day, or you could be running between meetings and trying to fire off a couple quick emails, and your intentions may be great, but maybe you're short in it because you are going into another meeting. Once again, the person receiving that does not know the mindset that you were in as you were sending that message, and it can have kind of a cascading impact throughout the organization.
Oh, very much so. And you brought up, let's talk about just for a second, that time where things aren't going well. And that's a level of professionalism that I aspire to be better at. It's not the next meeting. You know, that next meeting shouldn't be affected by what happened in the last one. However, you know, we do all have that commonality of being human beings. And sometimes just saying, hey, I just need to catch my breath for a second, or I just need an extra minute to process what happened in the last meeting so I can be fully present for you now.
Absolutely. One of the big things I picked up on the book, and I know it's part of the culture at your organization, is it's all about the people. Your communication plays a big part of that, but it's all about the people. So as you're looking at the organization and you're hiring people, whether it's directly for your team or as your leaders are talking about folks that they're trying to bring on, what are some of the key communication skills that your teams are looking for new employees coming into the organization?
Can I answer that with a really quick story?
Absolutely.
And before I jump into that, I just want to share with you how much I appreciate the homework that you have done in preparing for our discussion. That's a unique gift that you have, and the questions that you're asking are fantastic. So thank you.
Well, thank you.
One of the things when we look at hiring that are really important to me is I think that most organizations can do a pretty decent job of understanding whether the person has the skills to do the task. We almost take that as a given. And maybe in healthcare, that's a little bit easier because we have a lot of licensure. We have a lot of required degrees. Some of those things are in place. If you're hiring a family medicine physician, they went to medical school, they finished a residency. We know that. So when we interview a lot more for passion and desire to do the job. And one of the things that the story that I was getting to is we had an executive come in for an interview, Scott, and the interview went really well. He said all the right things. I was interested in his interests, and he seemed to have an interest in the mission of our organization and where we were going. And it was just one of those things where they finish, and my thought was, this looks great. One of the steps that I took is I went down to our volunteer desk and I talked to the volunteer there and I asked her about this gentleman that walked in. And she described to me that he was upset about the parking. He was mad because he wished he would have gotten here 15 minutes and the traffic was horrible. And she went on for 2 or 3 minutes about all the things that were wrong to someone that he didn't know. And he wasn't rude, but he certainly kind and he wasn't respectful. And we eliminated that person from consideration from our executive team. Because if we're going to treat our team members that way and different than maybe we treat the people that we report to or the members of our executive team, then that's just it's not going to work in our organization. It's a disqualifier. So I think those things are important. You know, mm-hmm. we want to start with people that have the ability to love others and serve others. And it's hard to find that in an interview, but you can walk back the path into the organization and into the interview and find out some really interesting things.
Most definitely. And it makes me think of a concept you hear a lot, especially in the sales environment, the brilliant jerk, or, you know, the high performing, the superstar jerk, where they get results, but they're a bull in a china shop, so to speak, where the collateral damage that they cause to get there outweighs the benefit, right? That just, whether it is they're upsetting internal things, they're breaking things internally, sometimes figuratively, sometimes literally, to get things done that, and I've seen it a number of times throughout my career, the results are always short-lived. And you see that oftentimes where they're bouncing from organization to organization because they go in, they get quick results because they're willing to do whatever it takes to get there. But ultimately, the damage that they cause internally to the culture, to client relationships, to internal relationships far outweighs any monetary value that they bring in. So it is ideally try to recognize it on the front end. And as you mentioned, talking to other people that they've interacted with prior to you, because obviously they're going to show up with their game face on when they're meeting with the hiring manager, but how do they treat others is going to be a good indication of how they're going to fit into the organization once they get there.
Oh, very much so. And I don't know if you've experienced this or not, but if we have the opportunity to take a candidate out for a meal, I always pay special attention to how they treat the wait staff.
Mm-hmm.
I think it says a lot about how they're built and how they see the world.
So Dave, as you think about your career journey, as you mentioned, you're working on 35 plus years at your organization in the CEO role now, leading a complex organization and having some great success with the book, your doctoral program. If you think through your career, what are some of the key skills that you've picked up along the way that really have attributed to that success and getting you to where you are today?
Yeah, we've talked a little bit about some of those, Scott, but for me, it begins with being present. And that's something that I work on every day. It's not something that comes natural to me, as my mind is often racing ahead to the second or third or fourth meeting from now. And so when I have that ability to dial in and treat the person in front of me with respect, the meetings are better, they're more effective, and I can serve in a more meaningful way. So that's always one that starts. Another piece for me that has been really influential is gratitude. And if I could share a quick story from my research on that, I interviewed a gentleman that was the CEO of a hospital in Vermont. And this guy came from a large Catholic family. And in his family, when good things happened, they had celebrations and they celebrated with meals. And so in his health system, they had meals that were served by the executive team, sometimes the board of directors, management for their staff on first shift, second shift, third shift, weekends. And he went on to say that if they had about 3 months or so where they didn't receive any special honors or recognition or awards, they just made something up because he felt like gratitude was so important. The mm-hmm. work that people are doing, and sometimes even the lives that people have around us, in the workplace, we often have no idea what happened at home or what's going on. And if someone might have a loved one that's ill or financial pressures or name so many other things, that all contributes to how they show up at work. Mm-hmm. And I think it's so important to tell them that we appreciate them for the work that they're doing. When we had our team members that were working in a hospital setting during the pandemic, the COVID-19 pandemic, I mean, they were at the beginning, they were running into a burning building. I mean, they had no idea what they were getting into. We didn't know about this virus. And subsequently, we had signs in people's yards throughout our community celebrating our healthcare heroes. We had people from the community bringing in food for the people on our team. And they were shown that love. And I saw what that meant to them. They were scared in some cases. They were worried about taking this home to their families. And yet they came back in every day and they came in with a smile on their face and they were tired. But that gratitude that they were shown by community members and hopefully our executive team, it meant so much to them. And that's something that I'll never forget. And I remind myself every day how important that is. And the third thing that I would put in there is the ability to ask great questions. And we all have that ability. And what I have found is that when we ask question number one, two, three, four, we can go deeper into how a person sees a situation, and we can learn how we might best support them. And that first statement, that first question might not get us there, but the second or third or the fourth one might. And it's been fun to do in the workplace, Scott. And I've also found that it works at home. I found that I think my wife appreciates that. I think my kids do. Every once in a while, they'll bust me and say, hey, this is part of your research project, right? Like, no, I want it to be the part of the way that I engage with you and the way that we communicate. So those three things are at the top of the list. And they're three of the 15 components that are discussed in the book.
That's fantastic. And it seems like they're working for you and they're working for your organization. I remember reading the one story in there, I think it was called like Baby Palooza or something, where you had the one time where everyone in town seemed to, all the ladies that were pregnant were having the babies at the same time. And you put out the SOS to your staff that were off. It was their weekend. It was their time off, saying, you know, we need help. Can you come in? And not only did you get people come in, I think you said you had more than enough people come in, where you had extra staffing. So I think being present, expressing gratitude, and connecting with people through asking great questions will make an impact.
Oh, that was so much fun to see. And, you know, most importantly, we took care of people in a safe way. We took care of them with high clinical quality, but none of those things were what the people talked about. I think they were there that day. I think it was the love and respect that they felt from the team, you know, and they were appreciative. The patients and their families were very appreciative. I don't think they were concerned or scared. They just saw that it was an all hands on deck moment. And, you know, a lot of new babies got brought into the world that day. And that's a pretty cool thing.
No, that's awesome. So along the lines of asking great questions, one of the things that jumped out to me in the book that I found really interesting was this concept of appreciative inquiry. And it's the thing that was so nuanced to me is just kind of how you flip things on its head from typically when there's a negative situation, or looking at something in a negative light, really flipping into the positive and going down that avenue with it. Because it's a great way to, I think, de-escalate, and then also make sure people feel heard. Can you talk a little bit about that?
I can. Appreciative inquiry was founded by David Cooperrider at Case Western University. And the idea is that we come at a challenge or an opportunity from an abundance perspective, as opposed from a deficit perspective. And a story that I can share with you, Scott, that I think helps around that is, in a small community, as you can imagine, when my wife and I go out for dinner, it's very usual for someone to come up to the table and talk about their healthcare experience. And sometimes that can be the bill. I mean, how many of us like or healthcare billing, right? It's not a fun thing. And in the past, my strategy was always to apologize and make a commitment to get back to them and try to make it better. That's the deficit approach. The appreciative approach is asking them that if their hospital bill was lined up exactly the way they wanted it to be, it had all of the information that they needed to make a good decision, what would that look like? And it's a completely different conversation. I believe that it's a right brain, left brain kind of thing, where if we ask for people to think about a time or a situation where it's the outcome is exactly what they want, it's a different discussion than here's what you did wrong. And, you know, by gosh, I'm upset about it. So I've used that as one of the greatest learnings from my research and from my doctoral program that I've incorporated into my life. And it's really filled up my cup. It's given me a lot more excitement about the communication and engagement that I have with others. And it's just been a godsend for me.
And it's such a small tweak from, you know, what's missing, what's wrong, to, you know, if this was perfect, what would it look like? And a couple of other examples you give of questions you can ask, say, to your staff, you know, when we're firing on all cylinders here, or when you feel most happy and engaged at work, what's going on? What tools do you have? What were you doing? And like I said, it really makes people feel heard. And ultimately, a core component of effective communication is that people want to feel heard, right? They want to feel value. You don't necessarily always have to take and implement 100% of the things that you hear, but the fact that you're asking, you genuinely care about it, you're taking it in, you're processing it, and then you're closing the loop on the back end is, here's what we did or didn't do and why, definitely takes the communications to the next level.
Oh, you perfectly described that cycle, and that feedback is so important. And my experience has been that even if I do tell people we're not able to do that at this time, that sets better than just having that open loop. Yep. One of the things that I was told when I was first into hospital administration and dealing with physicians is the worst thing that you can do is the slow no. Instead of, you know, if you know you're not going to be able to deliver on this, just tell them no and tell them why, and they may or may not agree with your decision, but that's better than going days and weeks and months and they feel as if nothing happened or they see nothing happened and then you didn't listen to me. You know, the idea is I told you what you should do and you didn't listen. And so I think we do benefit from exactly that cycle that you described, Scott. It's so important to listen, understand, begin to diagnose, work through what they're looking for and what the optimized outcome might be, and then having a discussion about how much of that, if at all, you can deliver.
As I think through the journey that you've been on, and especially now with the research that you've done, the book you've put out, the role that you're in, obviously, to get you from point A to point B, you know, lots of stuff has happened. You've grown, you've developed. You know, who has been somebody that has really contributed to that development? Maybe they've played a part in helping develop your communication style. You know, what is something maybe you've taken from them, tweaked, and made your own?
Yeah, I go all the way back to high school. And, you know, that's like 150 years for me, right? But I was fortunate enough to have a high school track coach. And his name is Lyle Hicks. He's still one of my greatest friends on the planet. And he was the most positive person I've ever met. If we said, this is track, right? If we said the word can't, we had to run. We had to run extra. And he beat that into us, so to speak, over 4 years. And it really changed my life. It changed. It was the first thought without knowing the title around appreciative inquiry, around trying to understand what we can do and not what we can't do. And as I've moved through my career, even as I've moved through my own personal health, you know, I'm not able to do the same things at 62 that I was able to do at 22. But I can either choose to focus on the things that I can't do anymore. You know, I can't do triathlons anymore. I can't do marathons anymore. I did those. But what I can do is I can get in the pool in the morning. I can go for walks outside, which I really appreciate. But it's that abundance mentality as opposed to the deficit mentality. And I think much of that started with my high school track coach. And I love him for it. He changed my life. And I know he changed the lives of many.
It's so easy to get caught up in kind of the analysis paralysis when you think about what you can't do, so to speak. You know, I used to lift competitive weightlifting, powerlifting. I cannot do anywhere near that. My shoulders are shot. My knees are bad. My back hurts. And so it would have been very easy to say, well, you know, I can't lift like I used to or exercise like I used to, and then just completely fall apart. But I had to think, okay, what can I do? I could do light weights. I can do bands and stretching. I can use the exercise bike and the treadmill and the pool. So really it is, it's about mindset. And, you know, the mindset that you go in with something, whether it's a conversation, an email that you're writing, or just your own planning, the mindset that you have at that time will 100% impact the outcomes of that particular activity. You could either decide to just not do anything. You could decide to, you know, fire off a fast, nasty email that's not going to be productive, or you could be aware of that mindset. Okay, how do I think through it from this abundance mindset? And what can I do?
Yeah, and a really quick exercise that I could ask your listeners to think about, Scott, is, you know, email is an easy way to review our work, because at the end of the day, you can go back, you can click on the sent file, and you can see everything that you responded to. If you were to keep score for a day or a week, and you look at each of that correspondence that you send out, and there's only two choices, it's abundance or it's deficit, is the majority of your response, which side's it on? And if it's 60-40, would you like to make it 75-25? You know, can you make some small improvement every day to come at the world from a more loving, more kind approach? And if so, how would that impact your self-brand? How would it impact your organization? How might it impact your community? My argument is, if we do things throughout our day that make others go home and talk to their family at the dinner table about, this was the best part for me today. I got to talk to, he, she listened to, we talked about, I can't think of a bigger win for many of us.
Mm-hmm. And along those lines, one of the things that you hit on was this concept of start with yes. It's a great way to practice this mindset of yes and is going to be better. It's going to feel better and be received better than no but. So if you start with yes, what can we do And we also are going to need to do this in light of that.
Yeah, I've tried to throw but out of my vocabulary. I'm not always successful at it, but yeah. I love and or more. And so that idea beginning with yes, my mindset around that, Scott, is why not? Mm-hmm. If we begin in agreement, if we begin by showing that we're listening and we want to cooperate, I think that's a different starting point. And part of the reason for me entering a doctoral program is I go back to 2019 and I was going through a period of time where I didn't feel like I was delivering the way I wanted to personally or professionally. And much of that came because of the bombardment that we all receive of negative communication. And I wanted to change that. I can only change my little part of the world, which is just infinitesimally small. But, you know, it matters to me. It's that one starfish concept, right? And mm-hmm. if I one person go home and say, Dave positively impacted my day, that's a win.
Love it. And with the book, you're going to reach a lot more folks. I would tell you, you've already impacted me, and I'm starting to think about how I can incorporate some of the teachings from your book into my day-to-day activities with my staff, with my family and friends. So it's always great to pick up these new skills. And as you say, be the best part of someone's day.
Well, that means the world to me to have you say that. Every person I get a chance to interact with, if they say I'm going to try one thing, that's a huge win. The other thing I'm really proud of, Scott, is, as I mentioned, I've been at KSB Hospital for a long time, and a portion of the proceeds from every book sale, as well as any speaking opportunities or chance to work with teams, is going to our KSB Hospital Foundation. They've been wonderful to me, and if I have a chance to give back, I'm excited about that.
Oh, that's great. And I'll be sure to put a link to the book in there, how people can get it in the show notes when this episode goes out. And you know, Dave, as we're wrapping up here, what piece of closing advice would you have to somebody that's listening to this, whether they're fresh out of school, ready to enter the workforce, maybe they're starting their own business, or they're mid-career, ready for change? What advice would you have to them about the importance of developing the skills we talked about today?
I think it's all about caring. I think the people that are most successful have the ability to be seen by the people that matter to us the most as caring and loving them. I think it's so important for people to know that they're heard, for us to be interested and not as worried about being interesting. And just having those having every opportunity we have to have a positive interaction with somebody. Life is tough. If we can make it a little bit easier, I think it opens so many doors for people, regardless of where they are in their personal or professional journey.
One of the things there that jumps out to me, makes me think, is when you talk about really caring about people and loving people, I think some people hear that and they're like, wait, that doesn't make sense. We're in the workplace. It's the boss. And for me, you know, caring about somebody and really showing that they're important to you goes back to all these things that we talked about today. I demonstrate that I care to my family and to my friends and to the folks on my team by showing up for them, by being present, by asking, you know, good, solid questions, by being interested in what they're saying. So all of these things here, it's not about hugging people and just telling them that you love them. It's about demonstrating that through these communication skills and these actions.
That is so beautifully said. It's not the words, it's the actions. And how many of us want to work in a place where we feel respected and we feel valued and the work that we're doing matters? And that's not a healthcare thing. That happens in any business. Mm-hmm. Have a passion around the work that you're doing, and even more importantly, around the people that you're doing it for and the people you're doing it with. And I know a lot of people are uncomfortable when they hear that love word. I get it. I am too. But it shows. And I think mm-hmm. the more ability we have to not just say that, but display it, as you said very accurately, Scott, it's a win.
Spot on. Dave, thank you so much for joining me today, sharing your expertise. I wish you all the best.
Thank you so much. And thank you for the work that you're doing in helping all of us to be more intentional about the way we communicate, Scott. I appreciate you.
Thank you. Have a great day.
You as well.
A special thanks again to my guest, Dr. David Schreiner. I love Dave's point about using your sent emails to keep score as to whether you are taking an abundance or limiting mindset. As we wrap up this episode, remember that the journey of improving communication skills is ongoing. Make sure to stay connected with Communicast by subscribing so you can benefit from conversations with future guests. If you found value in today's episode, I'd be grateful for your support. Leaving a rating or review is a fantastic way to let us know the impact this show has had on you. Thanks, and have a great day.